Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and there is a new IMAX documentary coming soon to an amazing theater near you called Deep Sky, which is the story behind the building and launching of the James Webb Space Telescope and all of the scientists and engineers who came together to put this project together and to study the images that it has been sending back to us. And writer-director Nathaniel Kahn is here to talk about this lovely, lovely film. Welcome, Nathaniel.
Thank you for having me.
So what was the impetus behind documenting this project, behind doing it in IMAX?
Well, I've loved astronomy since I was a kid. And I mean, you know, who doesn't? You look up at the night sky and it's just filled with mysteries. And we just kind of know that as human beings. And I, you know, pursued astronomy a little bit, built some little telescopes, and just have kind of followed it over the years. And as a filmmaker, one always looks for stories that, you know, have an uncertain outcome, because that they're more exciting and as a documentary filmmaker. And so I, you know, got the opportunity to document the building of JWST. And it was just too exciting to pass up, bringing together, you know, of course, my love of filmmaking, but also my passion for astronomy. So in documenting it, you know, sort of became clear that I was able to film the coming together of something that was just completely extraordinary and had never been done before. And there were all kinds of pitfalls along the way. And for a while, it looked like maybe the telescope wouldn't even get finished because there were funding issues and there were some technical problems. And these things often happen with a project that is at the absolute cutting edge. It's not that unusual, but to be able to document it was really amazing. I mean, it's science as it's happening. And then finally, this incredible launch, you know, happened, and the telescope deployed, and there's a, you know, kind of hair-raising sequence in the film in which we're waiting for everything, for all of these pieces and mechanisms and the mirrors, everything to open, because the telescope is too big to fit in a rocket. So it's like an interstellar butterfly. It has to unfold in space and fly to this place called L2, which is a million miles away from Earth, and begin taking pictures. So being able to document that was exciting, but then to be able to see these incredible images that are coming back, that are completely transforming our vision of the universe. I mean, this is an infrared telescope, so it's showing us parts of the universe we've never seen before, and in detail that was, you know, far beyond expectations. And these images are so beautiful and so vast, it's impossible to appreciate them like on your smartphone. It's nice, it's fun, they're great screensavers, but to really get the experience, a little bit of the experience of the vastness of the universe and the vastness of these images that are coming back, you've got to see them big. And there's no better format to see things big than IMAX. So the idea of presenting these, really the results, that was what it was all about, to be able to present these images that NASA and the European Space Agency, Canadian Space Agency, all working together, 10,000 people working together to create this instrument and send us these images, to be able to present those in a format that does them justice was just, you know, the dream. So IMAX was the right format, and it's been an amazing ride making this film.
And for me, someone who's also a fan of astronomy and deep space travel, 40 minutes is too short. But
well, honestly, for the story of the universe, you know, anything short of 13.8 billion years is too short. I agree with you. There's lots more there. But we also wanted to make a film that could play in science centers and really reach especially young audiences. And that's the length that we determined really is the one that can play in science centers and that can give you a taste for what is really out there. But you're absolutely right. It could be, a much longer film, and I'm, thinking very strongly about part two.
Well, having all those scientists express their joy at how these images are affecting them, and when, because they're, this is the first time they're seeing, they're actually seeing all these deep space images for the first time, and that first image where everybody has seen the Pillars of Creation, but this new image where JWST actually goes beyond, goes through the pillars, because it has the resolution, the power to see through that and give us more depth, is just fascinating. And
That's right. Beautifully said. And you're right. It's seeing through the cosmic dust that has prevented us in the optical wavelengths of light. You can't see through the dust, but infrared light sees right through the dust. And so we're able to see things in the place like the Pillars of Creation that we've just never seen before. Stars being born, places where planets are actually being born. These are things that we've sort of glimpsed before, but never seen in anything like this detail.
yeah, the just, I think the choice to not show as much of the actual building of the telescope and focusing more on the hopes and expectations of all the scientists, all the engineers, of seeing this project come to fruition and do what it was designed to do was a fascinating choice. I'm fascinated with the building of telescopes and face and spaceships, but just seeing the enjoyment of all these various people from all these different agencies who get to work with these images, who get to do the science behind analyzing what all the data in these images is bringing them was wonderful.
Yes, thank you for saying that. And you've hit it right. You've hit it squarely on the head there, which is that in the end, this is a human story. And as much as it is about technology, of course, and it's technology at the absolute limit of what is possible, it is really a human story. It's a story of our great curiosity and our ingenuity and our ability to work together. I mean, we live in such a divisive and difficult and really terrifying time right now, with just divisions that are tearing us apart. And to see, it's not pablum to say, look, if we can work together, we can do amazing things. It's just true. And when you see something like JWST, which is a collaboration between 14 different countries getting together, people from all walks of life, 10,000 people working for 20, for over 20 years to bring this thing to fruition. And they're united by their common love for the project, but their curiosity and their desire to reach beyond what is possible today, what we know today, to the future. And I think in making the film, we all realized, all the filmmakers, and film is a highly collaborative process as well, just like telescope building. We all realized that really the human story was the thing that mattered most of all. And yes, it is a technical marvel, but it is also, most of all, a human marvel and a marvel of our curiosity and our ability to work as a global team. And I found that we all did. We found that very, very inspiring in this difficult time.
So you mentioned how it took 20 years, give or take, to actually get this project from the drawing board into space. How much extra film beyond this 40-minute clip do you have? And did you ever consider maybe later, like re releasing, I don't know, a 4K home video release that has more of this information, more of the behind the scenes stories?
Well, yes, and I made a film before this called The Hunt for Planet B, that actually does have more of the building process, and more of the scientists and his feature length, but it only goes to, it doesn't go past the launch. So I have done a film that has more of the building process, but there's more still. And certainly I have a lot of footage, but NASA has documented this, you know, brilliantly all the way along. The camera team at NASA, led by a guy named Mike McClure, have documented everything that's happened on the project. And of course, I would love to do something else on the building of the telescope in the future. But I think we want to wait for yet more results because, you know, as you mentioned, this does focus really less on the building. I mean, there's enough of the building that you get a sense for the difficulty of it, the challenge of it, how long it took, how many people were involved. But we really wanted to focus on the images because for IMAX to be able to present those images and really be immersed in space, that was the aspiration of this, you know, of this film. But the process of building, of course, is fascinating, and there is a lot of footage of it. And you know, there are other projects out there, of course, that have documented that and will continue to. But I think for me, you know, if I do another film about this, I would want to find more results. And since you're a sci-fi person, the exciting results that we're all waiting for, I mean, there are many, of course, exciting results that we couldn't even anticipate. But one that we're waiting for, and we, I don't know how long we have to wait. We'll just have to see, is can we find an Earth-sized planet, a rocky exoplanet that has an atmosphere? That would be huge. And we're looking, and it's sort of right at the edge of capabilities of JWST, but it is possible with certain exoplanets. And exoplanets are planets, you know, beyond our own solar system. If we could find an atmosphere around a rocky exoplanet, it would be a huge step towards answering, you know, perhaps the greatest question that's, you know, haunted us since the beginning of time. And that is the question of, are we alone in the universe? And while finding an atmosphere around a rocky planet would not prove that there's life out there, it would be a huge step forward in the search for life. So that's the result that, you know, that's the result I'm most sort of most excited about that you know, waiting for, you know, most of all. And it, you know, it could happen any day.
Have you still been in contact with any of the scientists analyzing the images that have been coming back? Are there extra footage of them filming? It's like, this is this image from this section. This is what we're looking for. Here's what we found, that sort of thing.
Yes, they're absolutely. And the scientists are very, I mean, you know, one of the things that's so great about this telescope is that it really is the people's telescope. It is all of ours. We all paid for it. It's paid for with tax dollars. The data coming from the telescope is actually available to the public. So there is a certain amount of time that the scientists have to, you know, to analyze their projects and their specific data. I mean, it's highly competitive to get telescope time on JWST. It's the most competitive telescope time in the world. So people, you know, people put in all kinds of proposals and you know, I think it's fair that the data, you know, the scientists have a little bit of time on their own to analyze it, but then it's released to the public. And so I, you know, I'm also waiting for the moment when we have some announcement of, you know, somebody who's working in their basement with this data and discovers something that nobody noticed before. So I do indeed have footage you know, of course, of the scientists analyzing things, but they're very, you know, they're it's a competitive field. They don't share results. It's also, you know, it's also peer reviewed, so you don't share, you know, wild speculations. You need to have results that are very verifiable. So, you know, I don't have any secrets up my sleeve, if that's what you're asking. I wish I did, but I don't.
No, it's just, waiting for that breakthrough, that discovery. It's an exciting feeling. And as somebody.
Isn't it? I mean, yeah, as somebody who's into it, don't you feel that? I mean, aren't you kind of waiting for that too?
I mean, back when I was in college, I was one of those geeks who set up five computers overnight that weren't doing anything to lend their computer crunching power to the SETI
Oh, that's fantastic. Really? Oh, that's amazing. Oh, that's wonderful to hear. So
Yeah.
speaking of the SETI project, in The Hunt for Planet B, the other film, which is available and out there, I spent some time with Jill Tarter, of course, who was, fundamental in the SETI project. And she's the model for the Jodie Foster character in Contact, that marvelous film, which I returned to many times. It really holds up so beautifully. And the SETI project, is still going and still going strong. And the interesting thing is that, in looking for life out there, we have lots of tools, and we need to use them all. And SETI, of course, is listening for signals of, from intelligent life from another planet, among other things. They do other projects too, but that's kind of their core, is listening for those signals from intelligent life. And we need to keep doing that too. And the cool thing about JWST is it has, yet another way to look for possibilities of life out there, which is to look for signals from an atmosphere, which might not be intelligent life. It would just be the idea that we're able to analyze the light from a very distant planet and to say this planet has an atmosphere that could support life. So we have, tools that when you and I were growing up, we just didn't have those tools. All we could do is listen, like for the SETI project, listen for hope to catch a radio signal from an intelligent species. But now we have new tools to look for things in a much broader way. So all these things have to happen all at once. So we're living in a very exciting time.
You mentioned wanting to do a deep sky too. What would be the focus of that? Would it focus on some exciting new result or just talking with scientists to see like what have they uncovered so far that helps move the study of space sciences along?
Yes, exactly. That's what it would be. I mean, I think the results that are coming down, we've seen these incredible images, and they have, they're already going to rewrite the textbooks. But in the coming years, there will be, I mean, as much data comes in that is not actually images, but that is spectra, and the actual light that is analyzed from these distant places aren't always images. They're signals from the light. And to be able to get more deeply into these signals, especially from exoplanets, as they are looked at, I think would be a very exciting addition, because it would be looking more deeply at the world of exoplanets out there. Because there is a whole universe of different worlds that we know really exist, and being able to explore those a bit more through the data and through the scientists' discoveries would be very exciting, because we're beginning to really understand what those planets are like. We know the planets pretty well in ours. I mean, we're still learning an enormous amount about the planets in our own solar system, but to be able to think about learning about planets around other stars is really mind-blowing. It's a paradigm shift. I mean, if you think about it, you go out tonight if it's clear, and look up at the stars and realize that, 20, 25 years ago, we thought, okay, there might be planets around other stars, but we didn't know that. And in the last 20 years, this field of exoplanets has just exploded. And it's so exciting. I mean, I think it's the most, certainly one of the most exciting areas in science, all science today. To think, when you look up at the sky at night, that every single star in the sky, virtually every single star in the sky, has at least one planet around it. That's a complete paradigm shift. It's billions, hundreds of billions of planets just in our galaxy alone, let alone the fact that there are hundreds of billions of galaxies in the universe. It really does make you think, okay, wait a minute, just statistically speaking, one of those hundreds of billions of planets, perhaps trillions of planets, must have life. It just must. I mean, it seems like it must. Of course, science doesn't work in that way. Science works by actually making the observation. But statistically, you look up at the sky and think every one of those stars has at least one planet around it, and some of them have multiple planets, like our solar system. Surely there must be life out there. So that paradigm shift is so exciting to think about. It's really it's a telescope like this, to me, it transforms the night. And we mentioned that in the film. That's a line in the film that the narrator says. And the film is narrated by Michelle Williams, who just does a brilliant job of bringing the universe to life in a very human way. And that's one of the lines from the film, that this telescope has transformed the night. And I feel that way about it.
I'm also a fan of the music. Props to the composer there.
Oh, Paul Leonard Morgan did a magnificent, just a beautiful job on this score. And we wanted to have a classical score. We wanted to have a score that was big, and bold, and really felt like a space movie, felt like a little bit like Star Wars, although of course it's not science fiction. This is like real stuff. But we also felt that we wanted to have some electronica in it, to have something which had a more sort of otherworldly feel. And Paul put together this amazingly varied score that goes from kind of broad, swells, classical swells that you expect from a feature film about space and adventure, to electronica sounds which really remind you. He actually sampled things from some NASA space probes and used some real sounds from space to kind of inspire the sounds of what these faraway places might be like. Of course, there isn't sound in space, but that's not entirely true. Sound doesn't travel through empty space, but there are places with sounds, and NASA probes have recorded some of those sounds. So he just did a beautiful job in knitting the whole film together. And I think maybe most of all in evoking the grand mystery of the cosmos. I think his music really kind of captures this sense of wonderment and awe, but also this kind of wide open feel, where you feel, the music is helping you to really feel just the vastness of what's really out there.
Yeah.
I had a great team all the way around. My producer, Bonnie Linnemez, who never gets enough credit because producers are just like solving problems all the time, but she just did such an incredible job. And my editors, the editors that work on this film, were amazing in putting everything together, and the cinematographer who I've worked with for years too. So we it was really it was a family affair putting this together. A small project with big, wide open, deep sky visions.
Well, Deep Sky is expanding into 300 IMAX theaters around the country, for just in time for Earth Day. So, starting April 19th, people can more easily go to their nearest IMAX and check this film out. It truly is a wonder, and anyone who's a science fan, a space sciences fan, will delight at this film. The images themselves are stunning, and I'd like to thank you for helping bring more information about the James Webb Space Telescope project and all the people supporting it to us.
Thank you. Thank you. It was an honor to make the film. And I hope people go see it in IMAX, because those images deserve to be seen really, really big.
Well, we will have more details on the movie and when you can go see it near you. But again, Nathaniel, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of. Escape Pod, the free science fiction podcast brought to you by escape artists.
I rippled a welcoming cadence of light beneath my skin, and then, seeing the newcomer was human, made my best approximation of a smile. Welcome to Helixer Transgalactic Lounge.
Each week, one story told well.
She should have never come back to this God's forsaken junk heap of a space station. But she couldn't help but miss it when she was away for too long.
From the most astonishing and visionary storytellers of the genre.
But because time is a trick of the mind, it can be hacked. And we have gotten good at it. We had to.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Or find us on the web at escapepod.org. And on Patreon under EA Podcasts.
Hi, I'm Sendhil Ramamurthy from NBC's Reverie, and you are listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
Once again, the movie is Deep Sky, out April 19th in 300 more IMAX theaters than it already is in. Go see it. It's short, it's sweet, it's stunning, and I really do hope they have a part two, a part three, or maybe a home video release where there's like a 2-hour long version of all of the building sequences, the preparation for the launch sequence, all the fun stuff. There's one scene in there where they watch the telescope after it's being, I guess, pushed off to head out towards its station at L2, Lagrange Point 2, and the scientists actually said, "We didn't expect the cameras to catch this. They didn't expect to be able to see the telescope leave the launch vehicle and start unfolding its solar panels." They were completely overjoyed to see that, and it's a delight. If deep space and deep space science interest you, this movie is one you should check out. One other thing you should be aware of, there's an anniversary, a 45th anniversary release of the movie Alien. It'll be a special theatrical engagement on Alien Day, 426. And yes, April 26, 426, Alien Day. It's just like, may the 4th be with you. You know the geek drill. Tickets right now can be pre-purchased, pre-ordered through Fandango. So if you have an interest to view Alien on the big screen for the very first time since 1979, now's your chance. And apparently they have a special conversation, pre-recorded conversation beforehand, featuring Fede Alvarez, who's directed Alien Romulus, which comes out later this year, and Ridley Scott, who did Alien. Part of that discussion can be seen right now. I think there's a link to a clip from it on Fandango's website. You can find it on YouTube, on Fandango's channel as well. And it's a fun little short segment where Alvarez and Scott talk about the chestburster scene in the first movie. And I kind of want to see it on the big screen again. I may have to make room in my schedule to go do that. Oh, and how about you? What deep space science, astronomy, physics, quantum physics, quantum mechanics topics are you interested in? Are there any upcoming space missions or data scans from satellites and telescopes that you're interested in? Let me know. Give me a call. The number is 602-635-6976 or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can also come by the website, sliceofscifi.com, and leave a comment in the discussion section for this episode. You can also start up a discussion on social media. Head on over to Twitter, @SliceOfSciFi, or BlueSky, @SliceOfSciFi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. And if you're listening on either Apple or following through Podchaser, please consider leaving us a review or a rating. Your opinions, your support, people hearing you voice your support helps encourage others to also give a listen. We are also in the process of adding more video content, slowly but surely. Head on over to YouTube @SliceOfSciFi to check out all of the content there, old and new. And yes, some old podcasts will be dropping on YouTube very soon, since YouTube got rid of podcasts and I shouldn't say YouTube, Google Podcasts is dead and gone now, and some items are suitable for moving over to YouTube Podcasts, but I'm not sure what they are doing with all of the consolidation, because first they wanted, Google wanted podcasts to move over to YouTube Music, but nobody likes YouTube Music, so now they're doing what they can to have people put their podcasts on YouTube and actually be able to generate an RSS feed from their YouTube podcast playlist. So we'll see how that goes. I'd like to thank everyone who's currently helping to support the efforts here for the Slice of Sci-Fi universe, keeping Slice of Sci-Fi, Babylon Podcast, Writers After Dark, Charlie Jade, a few other websites online and available for folks to enjoy. Your pledges through Patreon, your donations through PayPal really do help keep things online around here. And for that, I am truly grateful and thankful. Your support, your listenership, all these years. I mean, next year will be 20 years for Slice of Sci-Fi. This year was 19. 19 years of doing a podcast. And technically, Babylon Podcast has been around for 17. So, yeah. That's... so much podcasting. So little time. Anyway, your support all these years really does mean a lot, so thank you all. If you're interested in adding your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Pick a tier, any tier, and you will become eligible for perks. Every month, the random number robot throws out an email address, and that person gets to choose from books, DVDs, Blu-rays, 4Ks that I have on hand. Most of that is review materials that I receive to help me do reviews around here, to help me prepare for interviews. And I honestly cannot keep all of it. So you guys get first dibs at some pretty nice stuff. I actually just came across a press kit from maybe 10 years ago when Futurama first landed on Sci-Fi Channel. So I have this big, huge Futurama press kit. I have no idea what to do with it. Maybe I'll do a giveaway, see if anybody's interested. Not sure yet, but it's here. And if you want to add your support but don't want to commit to a monthly pledge, only providing a donation every now and then, the link that you can use is paypal.me/sci-fi-summer. You can also support efforts here by purchasing through the affiliate shop we have over at sliceofsci-fi.net. I'm a little behind on adding content there, adding movies or TV shows that deserve to be remembered by all sorts of fans of science fiction and horror, be it new, be it classic. The selection there to shop through will be expanding. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slices Sci-Fi next time. Take care.